Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to fling your favorite fishing rod around. And here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance covers your boat and your belongings. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to high-five someone. But not while you're holding your fishing rod. That's a prized possession. So hold on tight with both hands and keep it covered through boat insurance. Get more with GEICO.
Hey guys, it's the Great and Powerful Mystery here. Just wanted to say before we get rocking and rolling into this season finale, me and Jay don't think any of you guys should go legend tripping. It can be very dangerous. But if you guys do decide on your own to go to any of these locations, remember to follow state and local laws, respect private and public property, and just treat the whole area with respect and dignity it deserves. All right. Let's get on to the show, guys.
I got stuff for you.
Holy moly.
I need to get some snakes and release them around my house.
But I love eating people. I love eating kids.
These guys are the scientists of the supernatural, lecturers leaving lessons for inquiring laymen. They are applying the scientific method to a world that baffles science. They are the cryptids of the corn.
Every day that you open your mouth,
I know, right?
I'm more convinced that you're abducted by aliens.
No.
And it just stood up. I mean, it just like kept going and going. And she goes, what the?
These are idiots.
I was laughing reading this because I already knew how you would feel.
Idiot. What part of the story fits your balloon?
Well,
this isn't a UFO. Yeah.
But who else has big black wings and red eyes?
Batman.
Well, Mothman.
Oh, yeah, Mothman.
Well, everyone, I think we know exactly what it is. So say it all with me. It was the Sandhill Crane.
Would you try it?
No.
You wouldn't eat it?
No.
Why?
Because they're probably toxic.
There'd be a lot of poop in my pants. Seeing a 6-foot alligator go swinging through the air and slam into a tree.
That may have been a weird intro. I've completely hit the wrong buttons.
Yeah, I think you forgot how that worked.
We're exhausted. I'm ready to be done with the season finale.
Oh.
Hey, welcome back. I'm the Great Powerful Mystery.
And I'm Jake Clone 6. This clone is melting down.
This is the first one I think we've ever recorded that wasn't in a row, and it's still taking 3 days.
I think that I'm shorting out.
Because this should be hour like 13 or 14.
Why?
And then guess what? The next one will be longer. Season 7, season finale.
The 24 hour.
All right, let's get back to it. You ready?
Yep.
Oh, did we miss out? Oh, yeah. So last one we didn't ask. I didn't ask you. What cryptid do you think of for New Hampshire?
Oh, I guess you didn't ask, did you? Well,
I think I at least missed one last episode.
So we've kept these people waiting these past however many days for this to come out so they can find out.
There's no way. We just did that 5 minutes ago.
Jeez. New Hampshire. I don't know. I just think, whenever I hear of New Hampshire, I think of Lake Winnipesaukee from What About Bob.
You know, I did the same thing.
It's just it.
There we go. We have our answer. I think about the exact same thing.
Yeah, I doubt it. You have no idea what that
is.
No
idea. All right. New Jersey.
New Jersey. Okay, obviously the Jersey Devil is what I think of for this one.
Yeah, Jersey Devil. I mean, it's hard for New Jersey to be anything but the Jersey Devil.
And the Trenton is the capital.
Yes, it is. Dang it.
You think so you far thought four. You thought that would stump me?
No, because I don't know. Is Trenton a pretty big city, I'm guessing?
I don't know. I just I literally only remember that from school, Trenton, New Jersey. It just kind of goes hand in hand in my head.
So today we're going to talk about the Devil Tree.
Okay.
Of New Jersey. An alleged cursed tree that represents a town's reckoning with a racist past.
Mm.
And it's Barnards Township, New Jersey. Today, teenagers gather around the tree, and they often deface it, which you should not do. Remember to the intro where you say, we don't think you should go legend tripping, but if you do, follow state laws, be respectful, be cautious, all that stuff.
Be good to your
don't
deface
a tree.
Yeah, be good to the environment.
A drive from the corner of Mountain Road and Emerald Valley Lane in Barnard Township, you'll come up to a tree that raised from the bushes. At sunset, It becomes a dark silhouette against a field that stretches behind it. It's known as the Devil Tree. The oak is believed to have a sinister power, causing anyone who harms or simply touches the tree, cursing it. The tree is a popular spot for teenagers to test their courage. Was that you or me?
What?
I think my stomach just made a really weird noise.
Okay, it was not me.
Unfortunately, bear the scars to prove it. Graffiti, burn marks, and deep cuts from axes, chainsaws are covering the trunk.
Huh.
All kinds of teenagers go out to attack this tree to prove how brave they are.
Okay. Wow. Ooh, big tough kids.
A local family once tried to keep the damage to a minimum, chasing visitors away in their pickup trucks, which gave rise to the legends of the ghost trucks that guards the tree. So literally this family local, like nearby, felt really bad for this tree, just getting that, like, tortured. So they would go out there and chase kids away, like swinging stuff out their windows. So then they became a part of the legend too.
It's like Mad Max Fury Road.
Mm-hmm, for a tree. According to local legend, the tree's curse originally lies. So how do you think you get a cursed tree? And remember, if you guys should be listening to the other parts before you get to part 7.
Ah.
Season 6 finale. Most of the time, these hometown legends have dark past. Things cause things to happen.
Hmm.
So how do you get a tree to be cursed and evil?
I imagine they hung a lot of people in that tree.
They did!
Yeah.
They hung a lot of people in this tree.
I got the Red Dead Redemption. Gosh, was it 1 or 2? There's one of these trees. They might even call it the Devil Tree. I don't know.
Probably a lynching tree back then.
Well, it was where they hung people. It was a hanging tree out in the middle of the desert.
How do you curse a tree? Lynchings. A bunch of lynchings took place in its branches.
Mm.
While anybody don't know what a lynching is, I'll give you a quick synopsis. Mostly it was, I believe it happened to black people here in North America. Would get dragged out of their house and often hung or strung up for being black. And that's a lynching.
Hmm.
Beaten, tortured. The goat man in episode 1 was another one. Like the goat man.
Yeah.
A black entrepreneur when he wasn't supposed to be able to have a business. He got lynched. It's not great. Not great. Happened. So while there's very little evidence to support that any hangings actually occurred in this tree, Barnard Township and the surrounding Somerset County have a history of extremely racist incidents.
Mm.
New Jersey's not really a state. I don't think of extreme racism.
I mean,
I don't go to New Jersey though.
I've been there once.
So the Ku Klux Klan had an extreme strong presence in the area in the 1920s, including large rallies, cross burnings, and even one incident where a Klan member interrupted a Protestant church service with a miniature burning cross and gave the reverend a $300 donation.
Mm. Okay. $300 donation.
In 1920s.
Gosh.
You imagine sitting in church, and a guy comes in, a Ku Klux Klan member comes in with a burning cross, puts $300 on a collection plate, and leaves.
Yeah, that's probably not
it. Because you know, that's probably $300 he just stole from like 8 black families that they just lynched.
Oh my gosh.
While the Klan's local presence seemed to have quieted at the end of the 1920s, it's clearly made a mark on Barnard Township and the surrounding towns. The Devil's Tree haunted. Sad chapter in local history. Basically, this place, you can go, like, the tree's still there. I don't know if it's private property or anything like that. Teens still go out there. It's the curse side of it. So basically, anybody that attacks a tree gets retribution.
Okay.
Like, congruent to the attacks.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, what do you think of the Devil's Tree?
I mean, is there any accounts of people having, like, I guess, reactions?
Yeah, there's all kinds. Everything from mild stuff, kind of like we talked about the lava rocks in Hawaii last episode.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything from extreme mild stuff to some pretty bad, dark things.
Mm.
The guy that hit it with a chainsaw, I believe he died in a car wreck on the way home.
Oh, wow, that's pretty fast.
Yeah.
Quick turnaround.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't mess with the tree.
Yeah, I wouldn't. It looks horrifying, but I think it's because people keep letting it on fire.
Yeah.
So it looks like a demon tree.
Is it still alive?
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
Trees are tough.
Oh, yeah, they are.
Trees are tough.
But that's pretty resilient, I would say.
But yeah, New Jersey.
Almost like it's cursed.
Yeah. Almost like a bunch of black people are hung in it for being black.
Yeah, perhaps.
Perhaps that happened, because it did. But yeah, that's, I mean, I know it's a small one for New Jersey. Sorry, guys.
Well, it's a small state, you know?
It's a small state.
It's relative.
There was other ones I left off the list because they're extremely dangerous.
Okay. Wait, from New Jersey?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which I'm not even going to tell you where they were.
No, let's not.
But there was ones where kids die all the time, like the Goat Man Bridge in Kentucky.
Yeah, let's just not even mention those.
All right. Ready for the next one?
Sure.
Or what do you think of the tree? Do you have any hard opinions?
I mean, it's very interesting. It's almost a piece of folklore history.
Yeah.
But
sad. There's pictures of the tree.
Sad origin story, but it's... I'm always down to look at a gnarly tree.
Most of them.
No, I love that, to be honest.
Most of them have bad starts.
Yeah. I mean, you ever, when you go through the, you're just walking through the woods and you see a cool, you know, burled up, gnarly looking wicked tree, they look awesome.
Yeah, until they have a face and start throwing apples at you.
Well, yeah, that's true too. One time I was walking through the woods behind my house and there was like a walnut tree, so you know there's the fallen walnuts everywhere, you get the big green, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Like, so I just picked some up and I looked over at this one tree and it had a hole about 8 feet up, but about the perfect size for one of the walnut things. It took about 3 shots, third one nailed it right in and it disappeared, and I was like, well, I thought it would just, I didn't think it was an actual hole, but oh, it went right in and it disappeared. I'm like, oh wow, okay, that tree must be hollow.
I crushed some bird's egg.
Yeah, probably. But I had to do it. I don't, it was something in nature. Like, this would fit in there perfect. And it did. It perfectly fit in.
Connecticut.
Connecticut. Concord.
It is not. Here's your fifth one you got wrong.
Wait, what's Concord? New Hampshire. Hold on. Connecticut.
You already got it wrong.
No.
You already submitted your answer.
Concord, New Hampshire. Connecticut. This is an easy one. Why can't I think of Connecticut? Hartford.
You already got it wrong.
No, Hartford. I know
that is the correct one, but two guesses does not count.
Hey, come on. Two wrongs make a right.
No, because you were immediately, Concord.
I think
that was the last episode.
The alliteration got me. Yeah.
So five wrong so far.
I got Hartford.
You did not.
I did get it.
If you guess enough states, yeah. I mean, guess enough capitals.
You would have never guessed that out of nowhere.
I would have. I knew Hartford.
Oh, but what do you know it from?
What do you think of for Connecticut?
Connecticut.
I couldn't even place Connecticut on a map, to be honest.
I'm sure I always
Maryland is the only one of the small states.
Oh, that you can.
I could, because of its unique shape.
Right, yeah. Connecticut's it's the one that fits in with Massachusetts. So Massachusetts sits right on it.
I don't know which one Massachusetts. Like, if you got rid of all the names.
Oh, I could get them
all. I could get Maine and New York over there.
I'd probably get all 50. I don't know, but my mind works better
if
for that
stuff.
If I
had all of, the papers out to put on the places, mm-hmm. I'd do all the ones I knew.
And then fill in
then fill in the rest.
Yeah.
Like Colorado, New Mexico, I'd probably put them out of order. I know Colorado sits the northeast corner of the four corners.
Connecticut's, I think, squarish like them too. Without the scale.
Is Connecticut the little square one?
Yeah, it's like I said, it's a cutout of Massachusetts. That's how I always view it.
Mm.
Connect, I cut.
The Winston Wildman.
Ooh, okay.
Do you think of anything in particular for Connecticut? Any monsters,
paranormal things? I just think of the same thing as Massachusetts, literally.
Yeah, it's hard. A lot of the New England stuff. I think of big cats for some reason. Mm. Big black cats for Connecticut.
Mm.
I know they've had a bunch of them. For a reason, that's what makes me think of. But yeah, so there's all kinds of Bigfoot in Connecticut.
Wow.
But this is a legend of the Winston Wildman. Connecticut's unofficial Bigfoot legend. So this would be their version of the Grassman, I guess. You know, this is a very special Bigfoot to them. Bigfoot-like thing. May not even be a Bigfoot. It was a large, hairy creature that terrorized the locals on two separate occasions, almost 80 years apart.
Mm.
80 years is a long hibernation period.
Yeah, it is.
The tale supposedly starts in August of 1895 when the Winston Herald reported a large man, stark naked, covered with hair all over his body, ran out of the clump of brushes.
Okay.
They just see this big naked guy.
Yeah.
It was witnessed by a selectman, Riley Smith, who was out in the woods with his bulldog. Marley picked berries, minding his own business, when the creature came along, causing Riley to go badly scared and his dog to become fairly paralyzed with fear. He He described it as a wild, hairy man of the woods, 6 feet high. He added that the man's hair was black and hung down long on his shoulders, and the body was thickly covered in black hair. The man was remarkably agile, and to all appearances was a muscular, burly man, the man against whom an ordinary man would stand little chance.
Mm.
Over the next few weeks, the wild man reportedly seen by at least two other eyewitnesses, whose depiction matched Smith's. The Winston Herald speculated the wild man may have been Arthur Backwith, an escaped mental patient from the nearby Lynchfield Sanitarium.
Is this the guy from that meme? You ever see that guy on the bicycle that's coming out of the woods?
Yeah.
Is this him?
No.
Oh, okay.
Keep in mind, this is the 1800s.
Well, you know, every 80 years he appears.
Yeah.
It's that cycle.
So they think this, so this guy escapes from the local insane asylum, and they're like, ah, it's probably just him.
Gosh. Like writing it off, yeah.
The sightings soon stopped as suddenly as they had started, but the wild man disappeared back into the woods and was forgotten about for a while at least. Almost 8 decades later, the wild man reappeared in late July of 1972. The Hartford Concord reported a strange ape-like man. They observed two young men on Winchester Road near the Crystal Lake Reservoir. At a long distance near a barn, they saw a figure about 8 feet tall covered in hair. They walked upright and finally disappeared to the woods. It was suggested they may have seen a black bear. And they both replied, that ain't no bear. I just love how it's always black bears. It's just always, anybody ever seen a black bear? And then the guys that say this probably has never seen a black bear.
Yeah.
I almost picked up a black bear thing. It was a trash can one time.
Yeah.
You the bear did. Was as surprised as I was that it was a bear. 2 years later, in September of 1974, the wild man was seen again, this time by two couples that had been parked at night by Ruggy Brook Reservoir. So what do you think? Why was that a thing?
What?
To go into cars together, like two or three couples, and go make out somewhere.
It was just the, it was, what was this, the 1800s still? Or no,
no 80, this is 80. 1970s.
Oh, okay, 1970s. It's just what you do. It's just the thing.
Because this makes me think of the Mothman.
With Linda?
Scarberry.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, Linda was doing the same thing, just saying.
But she was just with her man.
Right.
And they were on the hood of the car.
That's still, what's the difference?
But it's just weird to have like two or three couples in a car, and that's, we're all going out necking.
Right, yeah. I don't know. I mean, what else? I don't know.
So they're out in the reservoir, parked out there. They described to the police as being terrified by seeing a 6 foot, 300 pound creature covered in dark fur in the moonlight, and it fled into the area immediately. The police went back to search and were unable to find any tracks or evidence. Since then, there have been no reports or encounters with the Winston Wild Man. The nicely researched investigative piece by Brandon T. Basila of the Hartford Skeptic Inquirer shed a bit more light on the story, but suggested the original report may have been fabricated or greatly embellished by the editor of the Winston Herald, which happened a lot. We talked about that.
Oh, yeah.
Is that, you know, kind of...
Embellishment still happens today.
Yeah, but for when we look at these old stories, it's much easier to, when you go back, to just kind of water down the sighting, and you'll probably get the real answer.
Yeah.
But yeah. So yeah, this is one that was weird. What do you think of that one?
I always like wild man stories. I bet you it's... if I don't think it's the same creature, but it's probably the same... Like, of that creature, it's probably that part of its family, the offspring or whatever. Maybe they just reappear in cycles. I don't know.
I mean, do you think it's a Bigfoot? Do you think it's a wild man? Do you think it's people?
Well, if it's people, like I said, it's not the same person. Could just be people. Could be feral people. Could be feral people. I don't know.
Not too far away in Glastonbury, which is a fun name, has a hybrid beast called the Glaucus.
Oh, that's a cool one.
The Glaucus is a bizarre hybrid beast, part bear, part dog, and all terror. The legend of the Glaucus dates back to 1939, and residents of Glastonbury began reporting a series of strange animal attacks. Livestock and pets were found mutilated, their bodies bearing the marks of a powerful unidentified predator. I would describe the creature as being a combination of a bear, a dog, a cat, with a shaggy fur, a long tail, and a ferocious temperament.
Hmm.
The Glaucus... it's just kind of in the same area. It kind of looked like what we talk about, bulldog bears and stuff like that.
Okay.
But it kind of was like a dog that had cat-like traits.
Hmm.
Make you think of anything?
Yeah. Oh, dang. What was it called? A fossa.
Oh, I was talking about a hyena.
Oh, okay. I went weasel route.
So there was tons of sightings in this area. The glaucus remained elusive. Most people believed it was an exotic animal that escaped a nearby zoo or circus.
Mm-hmm.
And in one of our circus, like circus train stuff, like, there was a circus wreck nearby.
Like P.T. Barnum's traveling circus?
Yeah. But remember, we did episodes on that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So the glaucus may, in fact, have been a hyena or an African big cat that was on the loose for several weeks.
Imagine that. That would be freaking terrifying.
Tons of people seen it. And then everybody was like, yeah, it was a big monster.
Well, a hyena or a big cat in Connecticut is a monster.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be that would not be fun to come across.
So what'd you think of that one?
Well, I don't...
You told me to rapid fire him. I'm rapid firing him.
That one, I love the name.
The Glaucus.
Yeah, it just sounds like a bad guy from a...
It was probably a lion.
I'm willing to go hyena, though.
It could be a hyena. Yeah. Just with the temp. It destroyed cattle. There's police reports and all kinds of stuff.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Okay.
I could just see a lion that was like a captive lion just going nuts when it got out, just exploding cows.
Yeah. Imagine that. Imagine seeing that, I guess.
You're just walking through Connecticut, and you just see this 400-pound lion tackle a 900-pound cow to the ground, and you're like,
ew, I'm going to keep driving.
Oh, it was 1939. I guess there were cars, but did everybody have cars? No.
No.
You're maybe walking. Imagine you're walking by a field and see that, like, oh.
Or I better pedal away really fast on my bike with the giant front tire.
I think that was a little earlier than the 1930s. Oh, gosh. Can you tell we've been doing this a long time? We're getting tired.
You asking me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can tell. I feel it.
All right. Next state, Delaware.
Dover.
And what's the thing you think of most for the Dover or for Delaware?
Gosh, I just can't think of anything at all that comes to mind.
You've forgotten some other really famous ones.
No, I know. I think of Lauren Coleman for this one.
Yeah, that would be a good one. Yeah. Lauren Coleman's real first, like his first big case.
Yeah.
The Dover Demon.
The Dover Demon. Punch him to dust.
Punch him to
Call back to season one.
Mm-hmm. This one we're going to do the corpse lights.
Corpse lights.
Mm-hmm. The phantom light of Cape Heffernan. Henferlin? H-E-N-L-O-P-E-N.
Okay.
Henlopen? Henlopen? Cape Henpelowen?
You're saying it different every time. You're trying to sound out better.
On the Delaware side of the Delaware River's mouth, a spectral phenomena of a phantom lighthouse can be seen. I got you a phantom lighthouse.
There we go, finally.
Some refer to it as the corpse light. Others refer to it as the bad weather witch. Many deaths have been caused by this lighthouse on the rocky shores. So this is not the gray man.
Okay.
This is the opposite of the gray man.
This is like a siren.
Yeah. The light was first recorded by a captain of a Dovershire man drove towards it, causing over 200 deaths in 1655.
Okay.
So this random lighthouse appears. It's not there. Appears. This captain's like, okay, that's where the port is.
Right.
Went right to it, shredded the ship on the rocks, and 200 people died.
Jeez.
The Phantom Lighthouse with corpse lights is the subject of local legend. The corpse lights is thought to be caused by the old Delaware Native American curse of the drum of stone, signaling death to all the white men.
Jeez.
The curse was imposed on British soldiers who slaughtered the group of locals that were enjoying a wedding. So this Native American group was having a wedding in the spot. British soldiers came and murdered them all during a wedding.
Jeez.
Many people have seen the ghost of the lone Native American sitting on top of this mysterious rock.
Yeah, it was just wonderful history in this country.
The history of the lighthouse. To gain height, the Cape Henferlin Lighthouse was built on the north side of the Great Dune. Many ships were lost in the dark waters and the Cape. Necessitating the construction of a lighthouse. Many Philadelphians seamen advanced in the installation of the lighthouse. Thomas and William Penn donated the land. It was finished in 1767 and illuminated for the first time in 1769. During the American Revolution, the British nearly destroyed the lighthouse in 1777. The wardens repaired the damage, and it was relit in 1784, so it took a long time to get it back up and running. The sand dune encircling the tower was reported to be blowing away at a rate of 2 to 5 feet per year in 1897. Several tons of brush were put around the tower in the oil house in 1905 to protect the foundation and the brick walls from the sand blowing away.
Mm.
The original tower was constructed in 1765 and 1767 and stood on a shallow base above the sand dune some distance from the sea. Recently, the sea and several encroaching of the shoreline for several miles along the nearby beach. Beginning in 1914, the lighthouse service constructed prevailing workers were due to the general erosion of the natural shoreline.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to say, ahoy, or land ho, and not feel weird about it. So here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance offers access to the largest towing fleet on the water. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to say, shiver me timbers, and not feel weird about that either. Get more with GEICO.
These could not find made effective unless an exorbitant expense. Basically, couldn't really repair it unless it was going to be like billions of dollars for one lighthouse.
Yeah, too much.
The initial effort to strengthen the began, though, in 1905 and continued for several years. The near Delaware breakwater light took over the Cape Heffron responsibilities in the early 1920s. After the original lighthouse was decommissioned in September 20th of 1924. For 2 years after that, the old abandoned lighthouse stood, clinging to what little remained of the Great Dune. And on the afternoon of April 13th, a historic lighthouse in Cape Heffron, the gateway to the Baltimore, toppled into the water. So, the corpse lights, historically, the corpse lights have been delivered on, or had delivered on its promises on Christmas Day of 1665. So, why did they attack this Heffron lighthouse? Like, why the sand dunes started disappearing? They think it, like, if you go with the curse, the lighthouse may have been preventing some of the deaths caused by the corpse lights.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Because it's a real lighthouse instead of the corpse lights mimicking a lighthouse.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Okay.
So there's two lighthouses.
Right. So which one's the right one?
Yeah. So it was saving people.
Gotcha. Jeez.
So historically, the corpse lights had delivered on its promise on Christmas Day of 1665. It sank a ship called the Dover Shireman, killing 200 sailors.
Hmm.
Some believe a ghost ship emerged on a regular basis also after the epic accident. There's a ghost ship hanging out there fighting at the lighthouse. In 1798, a British ship, De Barca, was drawn too near and sank. Reportedly, that the ghost ship reappeared for some time to time, reenacting the demise. So it sank another ship. These guys went straight to the shoreline, thinking they were going up the river.
Shredded.
In 1980, the USS Poet, a 12,000-ton grain ship, vanished without a trace in this area.
Okay.
A big ship.
Yeah.
1980, not that long ago.
45 years ago now.
On October 24th of 1980, the Poet left Philadelphia with 13,500 tons of yellow grain destined for Port Said in Egypt. Lori Warren was the captain, and his 33-man crew piloted this ship to clear the Delaware Bay. The captain was released. The Poet radioed that its position was off Cape Heffron. Course, speed, and all that was in order at 8:30 p.m. The Poet was never seen or heard from again. Literally right as it was passing the corpse lights, it was never heard from again.
Mm.
But no trace, no lifeboats, no residues, nothing. They didn't find just an oil slick.
Vanished.
Mm-hmm.
And now it looks like the Flying Dutchman.
So yeah, that was a neat one. That was the first lighthouse ghost.
Yeah.
So it killed, I mean, at least it's killed
200
people and
plus.
Plus or minus a whole other ship.
Right, yeah.
But British soldiers slaughtered a whole Native American tribe during a wedding.
On that spot?
Hmm. On that spot.
Nice, wonderful.
And the Native American guy is still seen there. The corpse lights are still seen. They're not as important now due to, like, navigation stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, you have navionics on your boat and stuff like that.
GPS.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's still seen, though. It's still there. Whatever the corpse light is, this pretend lighthouse that this Native American's building on this drumming rock.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What do you think of that one?
It's like the lights at, you know, like, what do you call that? Slide Rock Boulder lights, you know, the weird lights people see. other fairy, even just like fairy lights or lights in the woods, people see orbs or not. But obviously this one was sinister, guiding ships into their demise. Like that, wasn't that in that movie or book, Most Dangerous Game, where they were hunting humans, but they basically guided these ships to this island, but to the part where it would shred the ship on its way in, so they'd all have to jump off and get on the island.
I only made it like halfway through Lost, but similar thing happened in Lost, I believe.
Okay. Yeah, basically they trick people to come by this. Their ship would wreck, then they'd be abandoned on that island, and then they'd hunt them. I think. I might be mixing two other stories up, but yeah, not good. Not good.
So Rhode Island.
The last one, the smallest.
Kinda. I have an extra.
Well, it's the last state
of
the 50.
Rhode Island.
Providence.
Yeah. What do you think of for Rhode Island?
Tiny. I don't know. Gosh. A cryptid in Rhode Island.
Or a paranormal
or
thing.
Or paranormal even. I mean, I don't know. I have no idea.
I don't know where Rhode Island is.
It's really small. It's over by...
That's the smallest state by this.
It's over... Yeah, it is. It's over by Delaware and Maryland and up right above them, I think.
Yeah, it's like you said, when it gets to these New England states, in my head, personally, I kind of lump them all together.
Because they are.
I mean, I'm sure they're very different.
Nah. No one's different is Maine. In New York City, it's different because it's just gross.
So I have two because neither of them are very long.
Okay.
I know these last couple have been really short, but we're also really, really tired. Rhode Island, I have the Forest Witch.
That's pretty neat.
The northern town of Forest. So literally... Or Forester, sorry, Forester.
Okay.
I'm getting to be delirious. The northern town of Forester is the home of the state's most popular urban legend. Dolly Ellen Cole was a natural healer and suspected witch living in the area during the 1800s. So this is just a lady that looked like a herbalist.
Okay.
And then somebody yelled, "Witch!
She's a witch! She turned me into a newt!
I got better." Townspeople set on against her and burn her alive through setting her house ablaze. The people that she had worked her life to cure.
Killed her?
Yeah.
While
Dolly wasn't home, sadly, her daughter was inside the home and perished in the fire.
Oh, they killed her daughter.
Yeah. But they thought she was inside, so they went to burn her because some guy yelled witch in town.
Right, yeah.
So Dolly came back, and then Dolly was a witch. She cursed the town, that's what they said, and vowed revenge. Sightings of her ghost still appear throughout Forest, Rhode Island. Her case is often confused with Dorothy Cole, a woman who mysteriously murdered during this time period as well. These two tales have often been combined into one chilling legend.
Wow.
They are different, though. They just both kind of had a similar name and a similar time.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so this lady was a herbalist healer in Forester, Rhode Island.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the 1800s, somebody who just went, probably somebody didn't like her. Older, it's most likely what happened. Is somebody owed her money.
So he called her a witch.
So he called her a witch, and then the town burnt her, or tried to burn her, and her daughter was home.
Or, wait, what year was this again?
1800s.
It's probably the early formings of the start of Big Pharma, and like this lady's actually helping people cure their ailments, and this guy's like, I can't make money off this long term. She's a witch!
Burn her! There's a guy to talk about called the Lunatic Farmer.
Yeah?
It is that. He's fighting all these companies.
What company? Like, he's a good guy?
Yeah. They call him a lunatic farmer because he's a caretaker of nature, regenerative farmer.
A lunatic.
Yeah. And he may have cured cancer.
Oh, what a lunatic.
And he will shoot anybody that kind of looks like a government worker.
Good.
It's just, he is kind of crazy, but in a good way, I think.
It's our people.
Yeah.
Let's get him on the show.
He does podcast.
We could probably get him. Reach out. Somebody reach out to this guy.
The Lunatic Farmer, he's got a documentary coming out about him. He didn't produce it.
But. Right.
Okay, next one is Stormalong, the giant captain for Rhode Island.
Oh, okay.
This is probably one of my funnest ones on this whole list.
Cool.
I loved it. So Stormalong was known as Captain Alfred Bulltop, but some legends also refer to him as Old Stormy or Old Stormalong. He was a captain of the Courser, a ship so large it couldn't fit into Boston's harbor, and even got stuck in the English Channel.
Oh, wow.
Which is like 3 miles wide.
Mm-hmm.
Tales go that his mast soared so high that They had to lower it to avoid hitting the sun and the moon at certain times of the day and the night.
That's awesome.
But Stormlight's ship wasn't the only big thing. The captain himself was 30 feet tall. It was a Nephilim. Yeah. It was a Nephilim naval captain. Not only that, but he was a whopping 18 foot tall when he was born, per the Salem ghost traditions.
Well, that beats the old the record from the, well, what's their name? The Bates Giants, baby.
Yeah. According to the legend, when he left Cape Cod, he was 12. He was hired to work on his first ship. As Stormalong grew older, he became the only person large enough to steer the Corsair, this massive ship. Stormalong also had battled mighty sea creatures with his bare hands.
Wait a minute.
Wait.
Sounds like somebody.
Don't give it away yet. Like every mighty legend, Stormalong needed an adversary. And for the seamen, this notorious Kraken was his greatest foe. He was not successful at his first attempt to kill it, and the event that drove him from the sea to a farm. However, the captain eventually returned to the sea and encountered the Kraken for a second time, wrestling the creature to death.
Wait, he went to death or the creature did?
The creature died.
Okay.
Another creature old Stormalong encountered was a large octopus, which got hung up on the ship's anchor after the wave knocked it over the hull of the ship. Frustrated that he couldn't wrestle the anchor free on board, he dove to the seafloor to solve the problem. Crewmen on board suffered tremendous waves as the captain tried to free the anchor. Eventually, Stormalong surfaced, explained that they had to wrestle the anchor away from an octopus who took it and dove to the depths of the ocean.
Insane. I mean, that would be awesome.
30-foot tall captain.
Yeah, just dives down the bottom of the ocean.
The ship didn't fit in the Boston Harbor.
Yeah.
Okay, well, who does this sound like to you?
An anchor long enough to reach the bottom of the ocean. That's what's awesome, too.
Well, they don't go that deep. I mean, there's our anchors. That's what they do.
I know, but if he said it pulled it to the depths.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, just imagine how deep a giant octopus has to be. Oh, I got you. Right. So, I mean, the ship's giant. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the anchor's got to be just huge. But this is Winslow Hofner.
That's, okay. So, you didn't get what I was going for.
Oh, okay.
This is almost, so, in American folklore, whatever reason we do, we make giants.
Yeah.
Paul Bunyan. This sounds like Paul Bunyan.
Yeah, if he was a seafaring captain.
I know, but it's their version, their local version of Paul Bunyan.
Okay.
You know, it's the, or.
It's Gulliver. It's from the land where Gulliver's from.
Rhode Island is much more of a seafaring place, so you make your Paul Bunyan seafaring.
Okay.
You're out west. Your loggers, your logging industry, Paul Bunyan.
There could have been some legend to it, though.
No, I mean, he could have actually been a Nephilim. Yeah. That was wrestling squid and octopus out there.
Sailing on a, navigating the world on a giant ship. Yeah, mm-hmm. I believe it.
So, yeah, what do you think of that one?
That one's fun. I like that one. I enjoyed it.
All right, my last one.
Okay.
And then we'll wrap it up.
The final one.
Final one, season finale.
Because we did, that
part
was.
Part seven.
That was the 50th state.
See if I missed any states, because I think I lost one.
You didn't. I counted. That was all 50.
I feel like I lost a legend, because I had a well-dressed Bigfoot in here I'll have to re-find.
Okay. Yeah, no, that was 50.
Nova Scotia.
Oh, Nova Scotia.
Listener Maddie had put one in.
Okay.
It was the evening. Sorry. This is the Bog Harbor incident.
The Bog Harbor?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think, right? Oh my gosh, I'm getting so confused. Snag Harbor. Shag Harbor.
Come on, brain malfunctioning.
Shag Harbor incident.
Shag Harbor incident. Okay.
Gosh.
Nova.
Can you tell that you've been doing this for 13 hours?
Me? Yes. Yes, I can.
In the evening of October 4th, 1967, the day had come that a tiny rustic fishing village of Snag Harbor, tucked away in the Canadian province of Nova Scotia and surrounding scenic vistas. The sun went down, and the evening was like any other, but at 11:20 p.m., something very strange happened in this isolated place. Up in the sky, there was suddenly a big, bright flash. Four brilliant lights traveled over the area for nearly an hour until the bright object suddenly dipped down and to go crash into the water with great force. Some people had claimed that an anomalous object had made otherworldly whistling sounds as it descended. A parachuting, its landing, was so loud, reverberating booms were reported from the object seemed to flash sequences of lights before it fell. One witness named Laura Wickens would say this of it. "We see four lights in the sky and over the land here. We thought it was planes,
But we paid no attention. More or less, we just watched the lights to go on and off, on and off. It went across the road in front of us, behind the hill. We couldn't see it. We made it to the top of the hill and lights in the water. We went to the phone in the booth to call the Royal Canadian Mounted Police and report a plane crash in the lake.
Ooh, the Mounties.
Mm-hmm. They went and reported the mysterious craft was floating above the water for about a half a mile from the shore while trailing a strange yellow substance, bobbing along the nearly for an hour before sinking down to the depths. There were several Mounties, officers, who saw the object floating as well. And in at least 11 people would flood the Mounties with reports of essentially the same thing. Bright lights whizzing across the sky, a crash in the sea, and the first of some to be a plane. In response, both local fishermen and the Mounties immediately launched a search and rescue operation. Quickly arriving to the scene, the object was supposedly gone down. Joined by the Coast Guard, there was no wreckage and no sign of any aircraft or unusual yellow foam that was found swirling in the waves. Interestingly, it would be found that there were no aircraft reported missing at all. Indeed, all commercial, private, and military aircraft were accounted for hundreds of miles. New England, simply put it, if it had been a plane, there would have been no one knew who it was or where it came from. They mentioned the lights and the behavior of the craft before impact, as well as lacking any of the missing aircraft and the fact that it did not sink right away, that the Mounties to pass along the strange incident to the Air Disc at Royal Canadian Air Force headquarters, which is there labeled as UFO reports.
Okay.
That was their kind of version of Project Blue Book.
Okay, gotcha.
It was then around when the military moved in, a Navy ship and divers for the Royal Canadian Navy and Fleet Diving arrived on scene at the depths for a full 3 days, scouring the entire area. Although the official reports said they found nothing, no bodies, no wreckage, nothing at all. Of course, witnesses that were watching these guys claimed that the Navy was pulling all kinds of stuff out of the water. They'd been whisked away, and there was nothing to be verified.
Weather balloon.
Mm-hmm. This will probably be one we do a full episode on.
I think we should, yeah.
But this is Maddie submitted it, so I wanted to cover it a little bit.
Well, thank you, Maddie.
There was some material still around to this day said to be from the Shag Harbor reports.
Really? Oh, wow. That's pretty impressive. Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we should do a deep dive on that one.
Oh, gosh. So we have a couple minutes. Let's just breathe.
Yeah, I guess I'm...
51, I think, is what we did.
Yeah, we did. 51 incidents.
Hometown legends.
Hometown legends. Things you can visit, see.
On your own accord.
On your own accord. That you can't... You're able to. Not saying we should, but it's possible. Yeah, this was a lot. This was really fun, though. It was interesting.
Did you learn anything about North American folklore?
I did. There's a lot of weird things going on in every single state.
That, and it's just there's a lot of overlap.
For sure, yeah.
But in a good way. I think it's just, it maybe sings true to something about the human psyche, that cultural importance into folklore.
Hmm. Maybe that's what ties all, I mean, like I said earlier, I don't know if it was this episode, last episode, or the episode before that. I don't remember. I don't know, but... The mind creates everything around us. And I don't know if all these things are just part of, like you said, the human psyche.
All right. I think we'll wrap it up here. Just take a moment. We want to say thank you guys for all your love and support.
Six seasons.
It's been a lot. Over 300 public episodes.
It's a lot. Thanks for listening to our voices so much.
Probably close to 400 public episodes. So thank you guys.
Gosh.
Some of you have listened to the whole show twice or three times. I think the record for like the Spotify reviews, because I know everybody listens to Spotify, but Spotify does that thing.
Right, the Wrapped thing.
I think it's like 68,000 minutes in a year.
Gosh, you know,
I don't even know how many minutes are in a year.
I don't know either.
Probably less than 68,000. It's probably time travel stuff.
Yeah. It's what's his name? Markham? Max Markham.
Oh, I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I don't know either.
But no, so. Really, guys, from the bottom of our hearts, thank you. We have some awesome stuff coming up. Everything from live shows to maybe a museum in the future.
To the Ohio Bigfoot Jamboree.
So just be on the lookout for all that stuff. After this, there'll probably be one more week of a break for us. We'll probably just post a couple of Patreon episodes for you guys to hear. And then we'll be back with Season 7.
Season 7. Sounds nice.
I gotta warn you, the Season 7 intro episode is one that's been asked for an extremely long time, and we keep turning it down because it has to be a season opener.
It's time.
So it's time, finally.
It's that time of season. It's that time of year.
The Season 7 opener is here.
All right, guys. I have been the great and powerful Mystery.
And I've been J-Clone 6. And we're closing the book on season 6.
Bye. Bye.
Hey, guys. Thank you for listening to Crypt of the Corn Podcast. Remember, the best way to support the show is share it with a friend. But if you are craving more of the J-Clones
and more from Mr. E,
there's always extra content on Patreon
and our paid member space on CryptidsOfTheCorn.com.
We'll catch you next time with more exciting, fun, and informative information.
Bye! Bye.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to say, ahoy, or land ho, and not feel weird about it. So here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance offers access to the largest towing fleet on the water. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to say, shiver me timbers, and not feel weird about that either. Get more with GEICO.